It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
Let's Talk Legal, brought to you by Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and you can call in on the local numbers, too, 247-7282 and 353-4674, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good
morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Last week, Ben, we talked a little bit about the important role of the clerk of court in Superior Court. And today we're going to start going through just some of the bullet points that we discussed last week. And then we're going to move on into different courts and what their functions are in the state court system.
Okay.
Kind of the jurisdictional, if you will, limitations of
right.
the different sections of the court, the district court, the Superior Court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the registered deeds, we ought to touch upon that a little bit. You know, we get the question all the time, you know, I'm going over to the courthouse.
Right.
Where do I go? And it's always, you know, it's a maze over there. What part of the courthouse applies to what circumstance and situation?
Yeah, I think most county seats, courthouses are mazes. You know?
Right.
They have grown over time. And so.
But absolutely, it all seems to kind of begin with the Superior Court, and the Superior Court is overseen, if you will, by the Clerk of Superior Court, as we discussed last week, who is an elected official of the county in which they serve. But so many folks think that the Clerk of Superior Court is just that, kind of a clerk.
Mm-hmm.
The word clerk
right.
kind of exudes secretarial, if you will, filing, organizational skills, things of that nature. And it is true that the clerks of our courts across our state in each county need to have organizational skills and computer skills and administrative skills. But they also, in the state of North Carolina, very interestingly, in each county, serve in an adjudicatory capacity, as
right.
we were discussing last week. And so let's kind of, you know, conclude here. There's help me out here, Wes. There's guardianships.
Right.
There's estate proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
There's foreclosure proceedings. There's anything having to do with a minor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which would be part of a guardianship.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Partitions of real property.
Right.
Partitions
which
of real property.
Which often comes up in estates, too, right?
It does. It's not what's called an e-file. An estate file would be an SP file, special proceeding file. Mm-hmm. And we have a different set of statutes we have to deal with, you know, as it relates to SP files as opposed to e-files. But, yes, and that could be very contentious because it's not just, you know, splitting the property itself. It's anyone coming in making claims such as, well, I improved the property or I paid all the taxes or I paid all the insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And the clerk has to make a factual determination as to, you know, whether the disbursement of the proceeds after the sale of the property would be something other than, let's say, if there were two people, 50-50. You know, if one party is making these claims, and the clerk has to make that determination as to whether
right.
they're entitled to those.
Right.
So, you know, kind of judge and jury there in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Very important role, no question about that.
And as you talked about last week, can in some cases call a jury, right?
Yeah, they're in specific areas of the statutes dealing with cases and jurisdictional issues that the clerk may consider, there is the right to request a jury. Normally, the clerk is not going to be asking for a jury.
Right.
And frankly, I'd have to look back at the statute to see if the clerk even has that authority. But certainly, parties involved in actions before the clerk have the right in many type of situations to ask for a jury, including, you know, guardianship. That
right.
would be top of the list on that, on the issue of whether the person is incompetent or not. Now, the clerk maintains jurisdiction with regard to who the guardian is going to be, but that very important factual determination as to whether the person is competent or not can be a jury issue if a party requests it within 10 days of the petition.
I think people don't realize all of that.
And then, of course, you know, let's don't forget, we've just failed to bring it up. There's the criminal, of course, very active,
right.
very involved, very, very busy side of the Superior Court.
Mm-hmm.
And there are, you know, bond issues,
mm-hmm.
Securement of bond issues, real property securement of bond issues that also land in the clerk's office, and also deal with the exercise of discretion. So our clerks of court in each of our wonderful 100 counties of the state of North Carolina, Ben, are not just simply filers mm-hmm. of paper
right.
work. There's much more to the job description than that. Now let's talk about some other courts in our in each and every county.
Well, you mentioned Register of Deeds.
Absolutely. Let's talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Register of Deeds, of course, again, exists in each county, and it is the official registrar of the recorded documentation. It is the place where the where death certificates, of course, are recorded,
mm-hmm.
birth records are recorded. Most folks think about deeds.
Right, right, property.
Property recordings, and certainly deeds are, in fact, kept in the registrar.
And is an elected position, too.
It is also an elected position. But there also, of course, are maps
mm-hmm.
that are of critical importance that are recorded, documents such as covenants, restrictions, other kinds of agreements, if you will, certificates of trust that affect and concern different kinds of land holdings, les pendens, which put folks on notice of the fact that there is some action pending
right.
relative to a property, to a real property, and that they're on notice that they need to inquire further as to this particular action.
Mm-hmm.
So the registrar of the Register of Deeds is also a very busy place and a very important place. It's fascinating to me how they are able to just keep everything in
right.
order as
right.
they do.
Yeah.
But they have a lot of assistance
mm-hmm.
through our taxpayer dollars
mm-hmm.
Up all the way to, of course, Raleigh, who assist in keeping, you know, the computer systems up to date and the various equipment that they need in
mm-hmm.
order to keep the technology at the place that it needs to stand in order to keep up with the recordings that come in to the registries on a daily basis.
Okay. All right. Again, so those are a couple of offices that are elected offices that people may not be as aware of.
Right. Then we move on to the different trial court levels. We were talking about the state court. You know, we start at the magistrate court level, then go to the district court, and then go to superior court. And recently, those jurisdictional amounts have changed, which is interesting. You know, in North Carolina for years, the small claims court limit was 3,000, then it went to 5,000, and that's, you know, your people's court.
Right.
You know, let's
right.
deal, and primarily this, we're dealing with things like summary ejectment, which would be, you know, an eviction. Sometimes we're dealing with small contracts, or sometimes we're dealing with maybe even the credit card issues that are small.
As you said, a lot of landlord-tenant stuff.
Landlord-tenant. Majority of what you see when you go to the small claims court in any county in North Carolina is going to be that summary ejectment landlord-tenant stuff. But that jurisdictional limit jumped all the way from $5,000 now all the way up to $10,000 this year. And last year in 2013. So I think the idea there with regard to the General Assembly was that, you know, let's make the court a little bit more accessible, you know, for folks. If they have a claim that's an $8,000 claim, we don't mm-hmm. want them to feel as though they have to go to district court. We want that option to be for them to, you know, go to small claims court. And you probably want to see a couple more attorneys in small claims court too, given the fact that the number's up a little bit higher.
Right. Exactly.
Because it is, you know, it's a little less formal, certainly. The rules of evidence are relaxed, certainly. And then you have a right to appeal de novo from small claims court, meaning you can just file a notice of appeal within the requisite time period, which is 10 days, and you get a brand new trial in district court. So you get to start over.
Right.
You almost get a free swing at the ball in small claims court. So that's where we start with regard to the trial court level. And then we go to, you know, the district court would be the next level. And that limit has also gone up. It used to be 10 and now it's 25.
Well, let me just ask you a question about that transition. If you make an appeal from small claims court, can you up the, if you get a brand new trial, can you up the,
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you've got.
But now you'll have attorney's fees and everything else.
Right. Well, yeah. If you've got a, say a $20,000 case, well, the limit of small claims court is going to be 10. That's all they can give you.
Right.
They can't give you any more than that.
But you may think that's all you can get, right?
Yeah. I mean, so let's say that you win in small claims court. And the court grants you 10, and the defendant doesn't like it. Well, the defendant appeals it, and then it goes to district court. The defendant is taking the risk that it might be more in district court. So, you know, that's something we always take into consideration.
Okay.
I think that answers your question
there. Yes, it
does. Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll take a short break. We're going to come back and learn more about district court here, too, in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law, here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. And we'll have more in just a moment. Hey, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. And Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, Attorneys at Law. And you can call in with your questions at 800-818-2255, 247-7282-353-4674. And we were just swinging open the doors of district court.
Right. We were talking about the different levels of court and talked about, you know, magistrate court, small claims court, and the fact that that jurisdictional level has increased up to $10,000. And now we're in district court. And by the way, that's where appeals from small claims court go to. They would go to a district court, and that would be a de novo appeal, meaning, you know, a new trial. You don't look at the record as to what happened in magistrate court because there is no record.
But there's some civil matters that start in district court, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Jurisdictional matters, that would be, you know, civil matters, up to $25,000 is really the jurisdictional level, and at over 25, then you're looking to superior court. And also, of course, the district court deals with, and it has exclusive jurisdiction, original jurisdiction with regard to family law matters.
Right.
So, you know, if you end up in district court on a civil matter, and there's a fair number of civil matters that end up in district court, and there's going to be more now given the jurisdictional limit up to 25. But if you're there on a typical civil calendar day, 80% of what you're going to hear about is going to be domestic cases. There's just that's what the district court judges are used to dealing with. Our statutes dealing with domestic issues are very specific.
Some states have separate family courts, don't they?
Yep. They do, and we pretty much do as well. It's just not called a family court. It's just the district court. That's where it starts. And you know, if you're going through the district court and you're dealing with your case, whether it be a domestic case or whether it be a civil matter of some sort, which of course you can have a jury on those if you want to as well. And then you appeal from that. Now that doesn't just kick it up to the superior court. You now appeal from the district court up to the North Carolina Court of Appeals, which is a, you know, completely different animal, because really what the Court of Appeals is doing is reviewing the record as to what was done in the lower trial court to make a determination if there are any errors by the trial court in its rulings, findings, so on and so forth. So unlike magistrate court up to district court, as far as your appeal goes, your district court appeal goes to the North Carolina Court of Appeals, just like superior court. Superior court cases, and again, we're just focusing on civil. Of course, district court deals with a heck of a lot of criminal as well. But in superior court, you know, your jurisdictional limit is going to be over 25. It was 10, you know, for years. And so you deal with the larger, you know, money cases, basically. Cases where there's not diversity of jurisdiction. There's not complete diversity, so it can't go to federal court.
Right.
Okay. So most of the cases that are state court, civil superior court cases, there are going to be North Carolina people normally. Sometimes they're not, but it's normally going to be a North Carolina related issue.
I would imagine if there's a corporations involved, you get a little stickier there.
Yeah, sometimes. And, you know, if you file an action against a corporation that is in, you know, you're in North Carolina, the corporation is in Delaware, for example. Well, that corporation would have the right to have it removed to federal court. They wanted to, and then we're dealing with the federal court system, not the state court system. But at any rate, the majority of those cases that you're dealing with and you see in any civil superior court in North Carolina are going to be, you know, North Carolina parties in most cases. Not in every case, but
in most
cases.
Is this where a lot of personal injury claims go?
A lot of personal injury claims. We would have a state-related litigation that is, like, outside the scope of what the clerk handles. And that's an interesting dynamic there because, really, the clerk has original jurisdiction with regard to issues of estates dealing with the administration of the estate or the removal of a fiduciary, like a trustee or an executor. In the event that there's an issue with regard to the administration, meaning something is not being done right with regard to the administration, or there's questions with regard to the administration that doesn't rise to the level of breach of fiduciary duty. For example, if we think that we have an executor who has helped herself or himself out. Well, that is a breach of fiduciary duty type claim. It's let's say another beneficiary under the will is wants to file a suit against that individual. That falls outside the scope of just administration. We're saying that you wronged this estate and you breached your fiduciary duty. That goes to superior court. Case law is, you know, clear on that. And you kind of understand why, because, you know, these issues before the clerk really are supposed to be quick. Let's help the administration move along. Let's resolve this quickly. But if you, if someone sued for breach of fiduciary duty, well, that person who is being sued certainly has the right to due process, including a right to a jury of his peers to make a decision. Not just a single clerk to decide the whole case. So, you know, there's a dynamic there that, you know, we kind of got off on, but certainly I wanted to spell that out because there's a difference between the administration type claims that the clerk can handle and then the more serious claims where we have to follow that due process.
Well, and kind of in essence, as things get more real, as things get more serious, they go up in court.
More money. They go up. Other things you see in superior court, of course, your personal injury claims, breach of contract claims, appeals, let's say appeals from a foreclosure would go up to superior court. Many appeals from the clerk do go up to superior court. Will caveats, that's a good example as well. Although the clerk has original jurisdiction with regard to the administration of an estate and signs off on the papers and has the executor appointed and does these type things, looks at the inventories, if there's a caveat, meaning a challenge to the will, then that's immediately transferred up to superior court because that's loaded with facts. I mean, those are usually loaded with facts and contentions, and you have the right to a jury. And not only that, the issue of de visit vel non, which is basically is the will what we say it is, it's Latin, that has to be decided by a jury. That is in the statute. So that gets kicked up right up to superior court, and that is determined in that court.
All right. Again, an interesting discussion here about the different levels of court and where they go, and we'll have more to come in just a moment. Here with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. You can find them online at harvellandcollins.com. They're also at 1107 Bridges Street, and you can call for your appointment at 252-726-9050 and more. Coming up with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in just a moment. Hey, welcome back. This is Coastal Daybreak, and let's talk legal with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and you are invited to join us at 800-818-2255 or one of our local numbers there, too. And, so we're talking about the civil side of Superior Court.
Right. Superior Court obviously also has criminal terms as well and deals with just criminal matters. That's an important issue, I think, for folks to understand as well. You know, sometimes the wheels of justice, I would say more than sometimes, a lot of times, the wheels of justice move pretty slowly.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes clients are left scratching their head as to why it's taken so long to do this or to do that. Well, one of the reasons, you know, when you're in Eastern North Carolina, most of the courts are not in session all the time. So Civil Superior Court, for example, in our district, District 3B, which would be Carteret, Craven, Pamlico, You have 1 week of civil superior court per month, and usually you have either one or two-week sessions during the year. So the majority of the time there is no court being held. So the way the session of court works is that you, all the attorneys, you know, that have counted their motions or are on the trial calendar show up on Monday morning at 10 o'clock, and those motions are heard during that morning and sometimes leak over into the afternoon. And then once those get done, then maybe we have 3.5-4 days to get the rest of the work done for the week, which would include, you know, trials. And a lot of times, you know, you're talking about a jury trial. It takes half a day or maybe a day even to pick a jury. So, you know, if you've got 20 or 30 cases on the calendar and only one gets handled, well, the ones that didn't get handled roll over to the next term. So you can see how that cycle can make things move pretty slowly.
It is frustrating for most people that are having to be involved in one, you know, that aren't on the legal side. I mean, it's frustrating for you guys too, but you're used to it a little bit more now.
Right. But I can tell you at the same time, but normally in order to get ready for a case that's in civil superior court, you need a lot of that time because it's not as though, you know, you just pick up your file, go to court and throw it out there before the jury and see what happens. I mean, there's that discovery process that we've talked about. There's the process of, you know, going through the summary judgment motions in the event that we think that, you know, the there's no genuine issue of material fact. You know, there's a process that is designed, you know, to funnel this big issue that we have down to smaller issues and maybe even get rid of some issues that aren't supported in the law.
To make it manageable.
Make it manageable. Right. Exactly.
If you want to find out more about how to get Harvell and Collins working for you, you can give them a call again at 252-726-9050. 1107 Bridges Street in Moorhead City is where you'll find them too. For Harvell and Collins, attorneys of law, the right advice at the right time, who bring you a Let's Talk Legal every Tuesday morning.